So Gordon Hyland is a writer, a filmmaker, a musician out of Kansas City. He has got the books here tonight, Major Inversions, and a story in Warmed and Bound, the Velvet Anthology. Gordon Hyland.
All right, this is from my new novel coming out probably a couple months or so called Flashover. This is the title chapter, and it takes place about a quarter of the way into the book. And just a quick background, Toby, the main character, he's the guy who's adjusting to the simplicity of small-town, rural Missouri life in a small town called Barrow, a fictional town. This is after touring the world in a rock band, so it's quite an adjustment for him. And he's a handyman who's taking any kind of like work he can get currently doing roofing jobs. And long ago, he was raised by his father, Harlan, who was a door-to-door salesman, and he would bring the kid along on ride-alongs. That's not the plot of the book. It's a lot more sinister than that, but that's just what you need to know for this section here. 20 feet closer to heaven in either direction, the cumulus sky with an equal reach as the mortal fall to earth. Boot soles found traction on roof shingles like skateboard grip tape, ankles straining their tendons to maintain balance as Toby squatted precariously near the eave. Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love coursing between his ears, he welcomed the brisk northwesterlies against his stubbled face, relief from the asphalt's absorbed October rays. His brain completed a perfect euphonic circuit between the in-ear headphones. A patch of tar paper still remained at the summit near the summit of the glittering new roof, but another hour would finish the job. The view perched here atop St. Anthony's Catholic Church was for Toby a more religious experience than anything that could have occurred inside the sanctuary earlier that day. All of Barrow, Missouri within sight, nothing piercing the treetop canopy but steeples of two other churches, the Musco lights of the baseball fields, golden arches of fast food, and the powder blue water tower a mile down the highway, America. Toby's own childhood mornings, Sunday mornings, claimed him as a Baptist, though once he was old enough to seek meaning beyond the ritualistic, he suspected that his father was an infiltrating atheist. Outside the church grounds, matters of faith and anything but oneself never entered his paternal monologues, be they mealtime invocations, athletic encouragement, or peaceful reassurances of his mother's fate. She died in childbirth. No, Harlan's choice of the 10:30 weekly service had been purely social. Fellowship always spilled over into lunch invitations, where he pressed community flesh and endeared himself, however temporarily. Just a normal father and son on the righteous path, cultivating trust and planting seeds of future sales. As innocence gave way to adult ambition, for Toby, religion proved inconvenient. Road life had existed in the vacuum of insulation and invincibility. All sins were forgiven at checkout time daily, with Gideon awaiting in the next city's hotel drawer. Always the challenge of a fresh set of commandments ready to be checked off. The very act of musical performance encouraged idolatry and required a gunslinger's confidence. Toby never rejected the existence of a maker, but he felt that public worship was a formality better suited to soul politicians like his father. Even in the 6 years since his music career crossfaded into steady daytime employment, his spiritual outlook had remained decidedly agnostic. Now, cut to present. This was the third job that he'd done for St. Anthony's, and their deposit checks always cleared. Still, Catholics, whenever so revealed, always infused his veins with a medieval unease. While all Christians forever stumble in the shadow of their martyrs' accomplishments, some ascetic defect particular to Catholics amplified their shame to levels that conflicted Toby with sympathy and derision. He traced the origin of this prejudice back to his time living with the devout masseuse Hannah. She was a glorious specimen on God's own highlight reel, but the gift of speech revealed, incessantly, her belief that all of post-Jesus mankind was born indentured. And this had soured Toby on Catholicism, but he marveled at their architecture, just not this particular church. The pastor said it had been torched by Union troops in 1864, but Toby didn't press him for its complete razing history, as he could tell this was only the current structure's second roof and couldn't be more than 50 years old. A gloved hand waved in his face, and Toby blinked back to attention. He followed the adobe-colored arm until it connected to Javier's sleeveless serpentine torso. Gotta watch that sentence there. His 24-year-old frame gyrating in once white painter's pants with a Latin hustle of triumphant celebration, despite his planted feet. Below his mirrored cyborg shades, his lips were moving, taunting. Javier tapped his radio headphones and thrust his arms skyward in the universal symbol for a touchdown. God damn it, Javi, I told you I don't want to know. Toby slammed his eyes shut and covered his ears, hoping immersion in Robert Plant's learning and yearning would suppress the twinkling scoreboards and pom-poms in the stadium of his mind. 7 games into the season, the Chiefs had not yet been mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. "Sorry, boss," Javier pointed to the steeple jutting from the newly shingled ridge cap, a white cross at its peak. "But the Lord will like this language, though, man." As if it were God's own antenna, squealing on Barrow's centers, or improving FM reception for laborers from Oakland. Another Catholic, another lightning rod. "Sorry, boss," Toby implored the heavens, appeasing or mocking his helper. "Anyway, turn that thing off. We got this thing knocked out, and then it's Cerveza time. But I want to rewind the first half," so he zippered his mouth shut. "You buy?" "Hell no, it's my TV. You bring the beer. I got some nachos, though. So I call that Raider-loving wife of yours and ask if she'll blend us up some of their roasted salsa." Grinning and shaking his head, Javier disappeared down the ladder to terra firma. Aluminum clanked against the eave with each step. Toby scaled the roof to the unfinished patch, each cautious step in time with John Bonham's drum assault. He measured and snapped a chalk line, then took up the pneumatic nailer, pumping .38 caliber rounds, semi-automatic, into the shingle tabs until the gun dry-fired. The rest of the nail magazines were in his truck bed, around which he spotted Javier on the phone, pacing and ignoring his employer's radio attempts. Toby trained the gun on his friend's head, squinting through an imaginary scope. He set the weapon down with futile curses as he ski-stepped sideways towards the bottom of the slope. You see where this is going. By the time Javier had taken notice and rushed back to steady the ladder's base, his boot ensnared in a coil of air compressor hose nested in the overgrown grass. He kicked his ankle free, but when he brought his foot back down, he felt the vertical hose parallel the ladder go taut under his step like a rake handle to the face. "Cuidado!" he screamed at the vanishing point above. The nailer attached to the hose filled Toby's vision, tumbling and scraping for his head just after he crossed over to the ladder and descended a couple of rungs. He twisted to the right to dodge the load barreling toward him, perhaps to catch it in his left hand if lucky, but the momentum of his weight carried the ladder top backwards, pivoting on its right heel just as Javier shielded his head. The nailer caromed off the ladder and disappeared into the nearby grass with a thud. But Javier's wits recovered too late to reclaim leverage on the toppling 200-pound sledgehammer of a ladder arcing through the sky like the second hand of the doomsday clock. Weightless, molecules inert in time suspension, the world at last rotated around Toby, and he was 10 years old again, plastered to the centrifugal wall of the gyro world. The half-digested chili dog in his gut threatening ejection on a wave of cherry limeade. Knowing his father was just an arm's length to his side, but unable to turn his head to share their revolution, the child's eyes instead locked with the ecstatic blonde goddess in perfect focus on his 12. Clouds shrieking the blue yonder as Robert Plant wailed, "Love!" in a sea of reverb and tree limbs and sparks and nothingness. Voltage equals current times resistance. Substation Toby transformed 7,200 volts into cardiac arrest the instant the ladder contacted the power line, a mere 8 feet from the eave. Death took his hand and completed her circuit before he even hit the flaming earth.